She could feel him begging her to understand. And she did. He was a sapling bent almost to breaking, the excruciating tension between the man he'd been and the thing he was chasing. Sometimes in the small hours, she awoke and saw him hunched there at the edge of the bed, staring out into the dark, his craggy features throwing long shadows in the light of a lonely candle. It was in those moments that she saw most clearly the gulf that lay between them, and she knew that she could not long straddle the breach. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off. Haytham and the spider track down the jackdaw to bring down some old-fashioned justice. As always, if you're not caught up yet, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, along with a couple of short recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, let's get down to the good stuff. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. She knew just where to find him. The old woman told her he'd been in there for nearly an hour. She said she'd been trying to give him some privacy. The old door yielded soundlessly on well-oiled hinges. The room beyond was small and well-lit by the afternoon light slanting in through the large bay window. It had that unmistakable smell of a sick room. For that's what it was, the scent of pickled herbs for compresses mingled with the sharp odor of powerful soaps that had to be sought special from the apothecary. And under all of it, faint but ever present like your own shadow, the dying man's smell of sweat and bedpans. But he wasn't dying. Each time she came with the necessaries for making the new place livable, Paul eagerly reported the boy's improving health. He was taking his meals sitting up and holding down solid food, she told Amitha breathlessly, but he was still in terrible pain from the fire and the beating, and mostly he slept, his dreams weighted down by the laudanum the old woman mixed in with his tea. Blackbird didn't move or even look back as she let the door click shut behind her. He wasn't where she'd come to expect him, wearing a rut in the overstuffed chair he'd dragged over to the boy's bedside. He was standing at the edge of the sickbed, tall and looming, his craggy features knit in their natural scowl. He was glowering down at the small shape under the linens. She could only imagine what black thoughts were swirling in his mind, fantasies racing one after the other about what he wished he could do to the men who'd all but destroyed the boy. The sight of him framed before the window, grim and motionless like some gargoyle on its soaring perch, unsettled her. And it dampened some of the fire that had carried her from the Eidolon to the old woman's hostel. She still had the letter, folded in fourths and crumpled in the corner where she'd gripped it while reading. But for the moment she kept her weapon sheathed as she sidled up next to the brawler.
"How is he?" Haytham didn't answer. "Has he spoken?"
He shook his head. "She uses smelling salts to feed him," he muttered, pointing to a tiny wooden snuff box next to a couple of half-empty glass bottles on the bedside table. "He won't remember anything when he wakes." She didn't say anything for a long moment. She watched the gentle rise and fall of the boy's chest under the linens. Half his face was still swaddled with bandages, but the half she could see looked almost peaceful under all the blisters and bruises. It was Haytham who broke the silence.
"You saw the letter."
Her pulse quickened, and she heard herself say, "Not sure how I could avoid it." She'd seen three copies of the note before she even left the Eidolon, and had she not been so caught up reading and rereading it on the short carriage ride to Paul's, she'd have seen a dozen others plastered on every shop front, and still more being passed out in stacks by enterprising street boys. She was surprised she hadn't caught the old woman reading his stinging indictment of the nobleman when she walked inside. The rest of the city surely was. The letter trembled when she held it up.
"Haytham, what is this?"
She could hear the anger and hurt and confusion in her voice. He looked up, not at her, but at some invisible point through the opposite wall in the infinite distance.
"The truth," he muttered.
She waited a full minute for him to say more, her gaze boring a hole in the side of his head.
"What are you thinking?"
"I'm thinking you owe me an explanation. Why didn't you tell me?"
"I didn't want you to find out."
"Well, you could have thought about that before you papered over the whole damned city," she said with venom, brandishing the letter in his face. "You didn't think I deserved to know."
"It's not that. I..."
"At least not before the milk chasers use it for kindling,
Amitha."
His eyes flashed when he looked at her. and she felt a flicker of fear in her belly. His face never lost that granite scowl he'd been wearing when it was just him and the boy.
I was trying to protect you.
She could feel him straining to hold back his anger. She stared long into his eyes, at her own face reflected in double, her jaw set, eyes accusing.
How is lying to me protecting me?
He blinked.
I didn't lie.
He scrambled to come up with an excuse.
Just didn't tell you,
he said in a low voice, looking away.
That's it. You can do better than that,
she snapped as he brushed past her and scooped his cloak off the back of the armchair, growling about how he didn't need to listen to this.
How long are you going to push me out?
That caught him. He was anchored by one hand to the armchair, his whole body turned away from her, facing the open door.
I want to know,
she insisted. He pried his hand off the armchair, motioning to the letter that was re-crumpling in her fist.
It's all there, he rumbled. Read it again.
She'd practically memorized the damn letter by now, but even so, she let her eyes flick down to the slightly smeared text stamped in its bold block letters. Elias Whiterose is a coward and traitor, began the indictment, the lordling's name, large and imposing, pressed across the whole breadth of the page. He is no lord. Whiterose was born in the coppers with an ambition. By theft and by guile, everything that he has, he took from someone else. He leaves wreckage in his wake. How can he serve as the governor's hand? Whiterose is in thrall to a gang of thieves and cutthroats. Whiterose is the devil whispering lies in Governor Femeriel's ear. He has already once been a part of a plot to kill the governor. In the year 4A-1112, Whiterose was given land and titles for stopping an assassin moments before he would have murdered the governor. That was a lie. The assassin was a milk chaser paid by Whiterose and his gang of thieves. Whiterose foiled the plot and left an innocent man to die in jail. He has held the governor's confidence ever since. Whiterose is loyal only to himself. He is a traitor to any who'd call him friend, for he will cut down anyone who stands between him, his gold, and his glory. How do I know this? Because I was one of the ones cut down by Elias Whiterose. I trusted him like my own kin, and he put a knife in my belly and left me for dead. Vengeance does not sleep. He'll do the same to the Edge if he gets the chance. Every day that he keeps his high place in the keep, every day that he eats at the governor's table, he twists the knife deeper. He will bleed the city dry before he lies and cheats his way to greater heights. Don't let him. She glared for a long moment at the brawler's seal scrawled at the bottom of the note, the pet name that she'd never told anyone else inked in swirling letters for the whole city to read. Blackbird. She pried her gaze up off the signature and found the sentence that had made her fly the Eidolon and come looking for him. She didn't believe it, couldn't believe it.
I trusted him like my own kin, she read. He put a knife in my belly and left me for dead.
Her eyes found Haytham's. His teeth were clenched, a vein throbbed in his temple.
That's it. That's all I get.
Her voice came out sharper than she'd intended.
One line in an open letter to the whole city.
He still didn't answer, nor did he move from behind the chair and the boy and the sickbed behind which he'd barricaded himself. But he pulled up his shirt and turned so that his sun-browned skin caught the light. She almost didn't see it at first. His whole frame was crisscrossed with scars he'd won in the years between, the bite marks just below his elbow he'd earned from some fanged animal, the straight white lines like lash marks over his chest and belly. That awful, gnarled stripe twisting crossways down his face. She'd given up on asking where they all came from. She'd learned the hard way that those conversations ended at a wall of stony silence. The scar was like a knot on a tree limb, small and puckered and shaped like a three-point star studding his side just below the teeth of his ribs. She heard her breath catch when she saw it, and she resisted that instinctive, intimate first impulse to touch her hand to his side.
I owed some debts to bad men,
muttered Haytham, his gaze downcast at the sleeping boy.
Elias chose them. Elias.
It was only then that the terrible weight of all of it struck her at once. The scar and the letter and his obliquely referenced stories about the years between. The whole way here, all 6 times that she'd read the letter, there'd been a gap between the words as they lay on the page and as she read them. She couldn't believe it, and yet the scar. That was no lie. It was the other reason she had for wanting to touch him, wanting to see it with her own fingers. A sudden wave of nausea surged through her, and she sat down at the hard edge of the bed for fear that she'd collapse. The nausea rocked her, long and steady, and she almost reached for the box of smelling salts, thinking she might faint.
That's impossible,
she heard herself say, more to herself than the brawler.
He wouldn't. He couldn't.
He did,
came his voice behind her. He spoke gently, the way you might try to coax a stray into eating a treat out of your hand. She could feel his gaze prickling on the back of her neck.
He wanted what I had.
From where she was sitting, in the window she could see the marble spires of the gray keep stabbing up into a monochrome sky.
That debt you came to settle,
she forced herself to say it.
You're gonna kill Elias.
A floorboard creaked as he took a step toward her.
He took everything from me.
She could hardly hear him. She was 100 leagues away in a Golden Quarter taproom 7 years back with Elias sobbing into her shoulder. He told her he'd done everything he could. His nose was broken and his hands were bloody, and she'd believed him. She clasped those murderer's hands and prayed until the small hours of the morning, when the gray cloaks came without helmets bearing their grim news. It was the last time she'd tried praying. Haytham's voice dredged her up from memory's depths.
He needs to pay.
Why?
Nothing would undo the years he'd spent in exile, nor the long months she'd spent with despair's leaden weight sitting on her chest.
Will it bring back what you lost?
It's not about that,
She looked back at him.
What?
He'd slipped from behind the chair and crossed halfway to her. His hands were balled at his sides, and his eyes were screwed shut, gouging deep furrows in his temples.
I made a promise,
Haytham whispered.
On the Hinter.
Bitter tears carved jagged tracks down his cheeks.
I dreamt about him every night.
She almost laughed in spite of herself.
What girl doesn't want to hear that?
It's all I had left,
he insisted,
knowing I'd be back for him. It's what kept me alive.
She could feel him begging her to understand. And she did. It was the last piece to the composite past she'd been creating in her own mind out of the little slivers of story he let slip, a few stanzas from the old epic ballads she'd sang back in her trooping days, and a sprinkle of Am's own imagination. She'd seen it on that first night at the inn. He was a sapling bent almost to breaking, the excruciating tension between the man he'd been and the thing he was chasing. Sometimes in the small hours she awoke and saw him hunched there at the edge of the bed, staring out into the dark or at his own reflection in the window, his craggy features throwing long shadows in the light of a lonely candle. It was in those moments that she saw most clearly the gulf that lay between them, and she knew that she could not long straddle the breach.
You're afraid of me,
he said, reading her mind. She stood up and wheeled on him, anger flaring bright in her chest.
Why did you come back? Not to the edge, she added as he opened his mouth to interject. To the Eidolon. There's 1,000 other inns you could have stayed at while you did what you came to.
He nodded.
I should have.
Why didn't you? What gives you the right to walk in and out of my life as you please and damn whatever you knock over on your way out?
She was almost shouting. She heard a creak on the stairs outside and dropped her voice by half.
I'm not afraid of you. Not the Haytham I loved. But I am afraid of what you're dead set on becoming.
Tears were beginning to blur her vision. She willed them back.
You think Elias is thinking about you?
I know he is.
She was past hearing.
He's up in the keep living high. And every day that passes, every step you take down that road towards something I don't think even you recognize, he sinks the knife in again.
She made a thrusting gesture with one hand for effect.
You may have walked away from that night, but I don't think you've lived a day since."
She was crying, and she hated herself for it. Hated him because he was putting her through it again, losing the second man she'd ever loved after her dad. She shouldn't have been crying. She'd known it was coming. The end. If not by him, then by her, and if not today, then soon. The gulf was too wide. Sooner or later, he'd have to choose between whatever it was they were and the cliff he was hurtling toward. And to hear him tell it, he'd already made his choice, every night for a 7-year. And truth be told, she was tired. This stranger who wore the face of the man she'd loved had spent the years between breaking off his soft corners until he was all hard edges, sharp enough to cut just by looking. She was tired of reaching for those old familiar handholds and cutting herself to ribbons on the glass. She turned away so he wouldn't see the tears. He already had. He put his arms around her. She huddled against his chest, listening to the steady thunder of his heart. She wanted to tell him not to touch her, and not to let go. They held each other for a long time. His bristly cheek pricked her skin like wires. When he spoke, his voice was gentle and desperate.
"Don't ask me not to do this."
"I'm not," she said hollowly, pulling away from him. "I know better than to think I can stop you."
She'd stopped crying, and she looked anywhere but at him for fear that she'd start up again.
"If anyone could."
He caught himself before that thought could fully escape and gave a low, mirthless chuckle.
"This is why I didn't tell you."
"Because I'd try to talk you out of it."
"Because I'd have to choose."
She didn't answer. She knew that by the time he walked into the Eidolon 4 turns ago with his face all bashed to hell, his choice was already unalterably made. There was only ever one way that this was going to end.
"Look,"
she heard herself say, anything to take her mind off the past. She pointed.
"The boy."
His one eye was open and bloodshot and trained on the brawler. His nostrils were flared, and the slow, steady rhythm of his breath became sharper and more agitated. A reddish tear formed at the corner of his eye and trickled into his dark, matted hair. She dried it with the corner of her sleeve.
"He recognizes you."
When she glanced at the brawler, the slight smile that had crept to her lips curdled. His face was totally blank, but for a small crease in the middle of his brow and the rigid tension in his jaw. He'd worn the same expression on the night that brute had tried to take her at the Eidolon, when Hatham had hurled him screaming from the 5th-story window.
"You won't remember,"
Hatham rumbled. Sure enough, it was only another moment before the lead weight of the laudanum made his eye roll back to meet its drooping lid.
"You won't see me for a while,"
Hatham told her.
"You'll be safer if I stay away."
"Don't pretend it's for me that you're doing this. Lie to yourself, but not to me."
"I can't have any distractions,"
she nodded.
"That's better."
He wasn't looking at her. It was another minute before he spoke.
"I don't want you to wait."
She exhaled sharply through her nose. It was the nearest thing she could manage to a laugh. She wasn't sure she'd wait for him even if he asked her to. She had a fancy to travel again, and if she was prudent, she could make the coin in her lockbox last 50 years in whatever corner of Dominion she chose, preferably somewhere warm and green and on the water.
"You know what I think? I think you're hoping he kills you. I think you can't bear the thought of living one day past what you're chasing."
She looked at him long, and her eyes stayed dry.
"Tell me I'm wrong."
He didn't answer, and she held him there with her piercing gaze for a long time. She had to ask,
"Do you still love me?"
He blinked. He looked more than a little taken aback by the question, but his expression softened, and he drew close at the unspoken invitation. She was looking at his mouth.
"Like breathing,"
he murmured, and he leaned down to kiss her. She dipped her head so that his cracked lips grazed her forehead.
"Then don't bloody die,"
she whispered, watching the apple of his throat bob. A sniff from the doorway, they both looked. It was Sim, Am's red-headed favorite out of all of Paul's boys. His face was flushed, as bright as his hair, and he was looking straight at the floor, twisting his hands together behind his back.
Paul says supper's ready if you'd care to join us, Mr. Atham,"
the boy stammered. He glanced up at the fiddler, blushing even more furiously.
"And Miss M?"
He darted down the stairs before either of them could reply. Hatham looked down at her like he was going to try to kiss her again. Her hands were on his chest, and she pushed him gently but firmly away.
"Don't want to keep them waiting,"
she murmured, biting her cheek. He didn't respond. She slipped her hand into his and pulled him toward the door. She gave it a squeeze as she led him down the stairs. He squeezed back.
Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a privilege to be able to share this entire story with you. I can't believe that we are over halfway through this entire project. It's been a ton of work, but it has been super encouraging to hear people's reactions to this story. If you're enjoying this story so far, do me a favor and send it to a friend of yours who you think would like this kind of content. All right, that is enough from me. I will catch you guys next week right here.